In other news.
To determine why and how the towers collapsed.
Kind of scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
You walk up to them and confront them. They can't stand that.
Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. In one of last week's Democracy Now! Shows, they covered the topic of geoengineering in the context of the Global Climate Action Summit in San Francisco. I mention this because of the general lack of critical reporting about real-time weather control and geoengineering on Pacifica Radio. Instead of delivering quality reporting based on analysis of past independent coverage to advance the narrative of illegal climate engineering, the topic is treated as if prior critical research never existed. It's as if the research and evidence brought forth by hundreds of Skywatch groups across the United States and Canada didn't happen, or as if the work of those who devoted their lives to bringing awareness on this topic never existed, such as the late Bridget Conroy, Rosalind Peterson, or Dr. Perlin Jerry, and many others. Instead, listeners were presented with a news format produced in the vacuum of a controlled environment with a false debate, set up involving a board member of the ETC group and David Keith, a professor at the Harvard School of Engineering and Applied Sciences. I would like to remind you that David Keith has made a career in the last decade selling the idea that if climate engineering operations were deployed, which includes spraying powdered aluminum from aircraft into the atmosphere, it would be an inexpensive way to buy more time before a global climate change-related catastrophe occurred. I call this a false debate because the truth is that the glaring issue of admitted ongoing climate engineering was not mentioned. Real-time weather control operations alter climate, and evidence has been presented that it contributes to the warming of the planet. Another issue is that in the introduction to the false debate, the Democracy Now! Host identifies David Keith as an environmental activist. David Keith has been propped up as a frontman to push for the idea of spraying nanoparticulates of aluminum into the atmosphere to reflect sunlight in an effort to reduce the warming of the planet. This operation is also known as solar radiation management, and the truth is that on this show the evidence has been produced that a massive program is deployed in real time manipulating climate. By not factoring this ongoing weather engineering operation into the climate change equation is deceiving listeners. Let's hear part of the debate with Dane Wigington and Professor Doug McMartin. Dane is the lead researcher with Geoengineering Watch, who claims available evidence indicates that climate engineering operations have been fully deployed. And Professor Doug McMartin is a senior research associate and senior lecturer in mechanical and aerospace engineering at Cornell. McMartin has been focusing on what he terms the largest control problem, which is geoengineering. In this part of the interview, McMartin tries to downplay David Keith's agenda to spray powdered aluminum into the atmosphere.
You're saying putting tens of millions of tons, which is the stated goal of geoengineer David Keith, who I know you know and work with, his stated goal on the record, Doug, your listeners can look this up, Jeff, is to put 20 million tons of aluminum nanoparticulates into the atmosphere. You're saying that that wouldn't affect the global climate? We have NOAA stating that the aircraft trails, whatever those are radically affecting the global climate. How can you possibly say it wouldn't affect the climate? Do you want to clarify Dane, that question first?
Dane, did you want to repeat back the previous sentence that I made about altitude?
No. You said that if they were putting materials into the climate at 40,000 feet, it would not affect the climate. How can you possibly make that statement? When you alter convection, Doug, I'm losing 60, 70, 80% of my solar PV uptake because of direct sunlight loss. When you cover the horizon and aircraft emissions are covering the entire horizon, how can you possibly say, when NOAA admits on the record, that that has a radical effect on the climate? Your only argument, Doug, is that you're talking about your definition of 70.
That has been made.
Hey, wait a minute.
I was interrupting you,
and you're not letting me finish, Doug.
Hold on. Let Dane finish. Go ahead, Dane.
Your argument is what you describe as Douglas McMartin's personal definition of climate engineering occurring at 70,000 feet, and you know that that's not occurring. That's not what we're talking about here, Doug. That's not what we're talking about. Do you know or deny that David Keith has proposed putting tens of millions of tons of aluminum nanoparticulates, the most recognized geoengineer in the world, into the atmosphere. Will you acknowledge that?
I think that is a highly misleading statement on at least three counts.
Do you deny
that
he said
that? I think you know it's a misleading statement. First of all,
I'm asking, do you know he said that?
I would say that is a highly misleading statement, and I think it would be the correct statement is David Keith wrote a paper that essentially asked the question of, hey, everybody normally talks about putting sulfate. Maybe you could do this with aluminum. And he wrote the paper, and I think the conclusion from that paper was, yeah, you could do it, but it probably wouldn't be a good idea. That's not the same as proposing something. It's basically asking a question and answering it. The amount of material that he was talking about, once again, he was talking about putting that sufficiently high into the atmosphere that you're up in the region where you have a residence time of a year, not in a region where you have a residence time of a week.
So why does MIT then, Doug, state from David Keith that geoengineering would be incredibly cheap and easy? Quote from MIT. You're saying it's impossible. Dr. Keith
today,
at MIT saying it would be incredibly cheap and easy. How do you refute that?
The difference between the English tense would be and the English word is.
You know, semantics aren't going to change this argument. That's exactly what was stated.
Dane,
not
that's not semantics.
Future tense.
Tense actually
not
matters.
Future tense.
There's a difference between
not
something
be
being possible and something being done. I think you should understand that. And don't try to insult people.
So your interpretation
with the
of
distinction
MIT
between
David
saying
Keith.
Something would be easy is proof that it is currently easy today. Those are not the same thing.
So would means in their term, what, 100 years from now or 200 years from now? Because none of their data states that. It says right now. And Doug, I was at the conference where David Keith proposed 10 million tons of aluminum nanoparticulates in the atmosphere. So it's on film. I would ask your listeners to look at that. You know, you from every angle, when the stratosphere definition is redefined by you, when the NOAA study is redefined by you, not citing any particular source, and now you redefine the MIT study, which directly from David Keith at MIT stating it would be cheap and easy, not off in the future, now. So you're adding your own interpretation onto everything and asking us to accept that as fact. I'm sorry, I'm not going to throw all these facts out the window because you say differently.
Actually, I think you're just not listening to what I'm saying.
I am listening to what you're saying.
I think that it would not fundamentally be difficult to design an airplane that could do that. That's not the same statement as an aircraft currently exists to do that. Do you agree with that?
No, I don't agree with that. The study
you don't agree
say
with
anything
the statement
that
something
anything
being
of that
possible
type, Doug,
is different
you,
from
you know, something you're making
existing?
This up as you go, my friend. The studies don't say anything like that. Nothing like that.
Professor McMartin, this is a radio station. You can't use profanity. Okay, so please don't do that again.
Dane is refusing to answer a simple question. Dane, do you believe that there is a distinction between saying something is possible and something is being done? Yes or no?
It's an irrelevant question, Doug.
It's not an
irrelevant
question
say they
because
would be.
You're claiming that I'm saying those are that is the part of the basis of your argument.
Can we jump?
You said
can
I'm
we get
redefining
past
what MIT said, and I'm saying no, you're the one redefining it. Answer the question, yes or no?
Doug, the study doesn't say what you said, period.
It says it would be easy. I agree.
It doesn't say someday we could design aircraft. It says that this is the capability now.
That was from the live debate broadcast on WBAI. McMartin unsuccessfully tries to cover for David Keith, but Dane won't let him. Here is one of the many instances where David Keith discusses aerosol geoengineering using aluminum nanoparticles to spray from aircraft into the atmosphere.
There's no question that large-scale climate engineering is untested and dangerous. We've mostly thought about sulfur, and there's a lot of good reasons to think about sulfur, because sulfur is what nature does, and there are very good reasons to think we would like to start very slowly if we ever wanted to do this and do something that was an analog to nature, because we have some idea what the downsides of what nature does are. Nevertheless, there might be some good reasons to think about alumina. It turns out, first of all, there's been a lot of work on the environmental consequences of alumina in the stratosphere because it's in shuttle exhausts. There's a bunch of papers. companies that look at the radiative and ozone-destroying properties of alumina in the stratosphere, and those make you think it might be useful. The big deal, really, is that alumina has four times the volumetric radiative forcing for small particles, as does sulfur. And that means you have four times less surface area for the same radiative forcing. And this is a much bigger deal. You have roughly 16 times less the coagulation rate. And that's the thing that really drives removal. So you could get away, we think, with much smaller mass fluxes. But we haven't run those studies yet, so that might be wrong. The little picture is from a nanofabrication study, which shows you can make very high quality, and do this in just a jet in a very simple way, make high quality alumina particles just by spraying alumina vapor out, which oxidizes. So it's certainly in principle possible to do that. There's a big literature that's already looked at that. Look at the alumina or sulfuric acid functions, which are the mass-specific mass-specific backscatter, so a measure of radiative forcing. In fact, I have it in watts per square meter per megaton. And those things fall off as the particles get larger. But even more important, the fall speed rises quite rapidly in this regime. And so as particles stick together and get large, they fall out of the stratosphere very quickly. And so particles that are too large are much less effective per unit mass. Aerosol geoengineering looks like it is so cheap that the cost is basically not going to be an issue. That means that implementation decisions will be risk-to-risk decisions. The risk of doing it against the risk of not doing it. And it makes the problem of how we govern it fundamentally harder and different and novel. Another reason why I think more knowledge is good is I think this will turn out to be more complicated and harder to do than we now think. So I've told you that it's cheap to deliver materials to the stratosphere, and I'm convinced that's true. I don't think that will change. But I think the more we do research, the less easy this will look, the more complicated the environmental effects will look. And that's a good thing, because right now it looks too easy. So I think that if we do more research, we're likely to find out that it's harder and more complicated than we thought, and that the side effects are harder to manage. And that's a healthy outcome that will make it easier to do the management. It's an empirical question, how people will actually react to knowledge about this. Another reaction is to say, if these crazy scientists are so concerned about putting CO2 in the atmosphere, they want to think about these things, then that might actually mean we should be more serious about the risks of CO2 in the atmosphere. And by the way, it's not really a moral hazard. It's more like free riding on our grandkids.
This lie by omission is part of the organized deception against you, the listener. Calling David Keith an environmental activist is like saying the Vatican doesn't have a child rape crisis. My guess is that David Keith is paid to cause doublethink and confusion, while the upwelling of businesses, likely backed by InQtel government venture capitalists, are developing the weather control industry and network, but it needs to be brought out from the illegal underground to be sold to the public for legitimate government funding projects. Whatever is needed to hold the second-net progressive media outlets accountable and end the lying by omission on the topic of real-time climate engineering is long overdue. If you're new to this show, it started in 2010, and a main focus has been climate engineering. In Other News has produced the highest volume of shows on the topic of geoengineering and weather control than any show on the Pacific Network. Will public and community radio begin to honestly investigate and report on this topic? Because it's rarely mentioned, and if it's mentioned, it's sometimes laced with propaganda. Now, a few years ago, longtime KPFA listener Vivian Morkington was a guest on this show, admonishing public and community radio to take some courage and accurately cover the topic of climate engineering. The harmful fallout, Monsanto, the carbon credit tax scam, and really connect it all together. In November of 2014, Vivian Warkentin's article, The Real Inconvenient Truth, was published online at the Berkeley Daily Planet, and I read it on the air. I enhanced the audio mix a little bit for emphasis. Let's take a listen. The Real Inconvenient Truth by Vivian Warkentin. A person might be stoned for heresy in Berkeley if they were to question belief in global warming. But As a decades-long left-leaning KPFA listening and sponsoring, commuter bike riding, composting, plastic avoiding, bring your own cloth grocery bag environmental activist, I'm seeing too much hypocrisy and closed-minded smugness, and a lack of critical thinking on the part of those who I have always thought of as my people. I've come to the conclusion that those with liberal roots like me have been sent on a fool's errand, sucked into the unquestioning groupthink and religiosity by a well-funded corporatized environmental establishment that is scaring us into accepting top-down, pre-prescribed faux solutions that have never had public input and are designed to enrich bankers, diminish the rights of ordinary people, and funnel us into a controlled, technocratic society. We hear plenty of talk about lowering parts per million of carbon, while basic principles of environmentalism are violated, such as don't pollute, do no harm, local control, conservation, recycle, reuse, live simply, less technology, not more. The democratic left has been hijacked and infiltrated, our ideals and beliefs distorted and twisted into a disciplinary social agenda which demonizes rank-and-file humanity and deflects responsibility away from the real perpetrators of the destruction of our natural world. Al Gore, the man charged with popularizing the global warming theory, uses 20 times the energy of the average person in just one of his multi-million-dollar homes. Yet his, quote, carbon footprint is never put under a spotlight. Few remember how, as vice president, he used his, quote, earth in the balanced environmental cred to stump for passage of NAFTA and free trade policies, which started the environmental race to the bottom, in the wholesale giving away of local power over land and laws to multinational corporations. Now, Gore is investing with partners such as Goldman Sachs in carbon trading schemes, espousing the self-enriching solution to a problem he defines. It would seem subscribers to the theory of global warming never question the designation of CO2 as the root of our environmental problems and its convenient, consequent value as a global taxable trading currency founded on the commodification of nature and a newly invented, quote, right to pollute. This unverifiable system run by bankers will accelerate, not slow, the pillaging of the planet. It is my observation that all aspects of the left, alternative media, from the progressive weeklies to KPFA radio, are conducting the environmental wing of the global war on terror, never missing an opportunity to frighten and guilt trip us that we will cause, quote, game over for the planet if we don't vote for, quote, climate change legislation, a.k.a. carbon taxes and carbon trading, and support, quote, smart growth policies. We are schooled that only crazy right-wingers could possibly question the, quote, settled science and the, quote, settled remedies. Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, is always cited as a trusted, go-to body of expertise, even though their integrity was discredited with the, quote, Climate Gate scandal based on leaked emails in which head scientists at the IPCC, Michael Mann of Penn State, and Phil Jones of East Anglia University discussed doctoring the data on the, quote, hockey stick graph created by Michael Mann, and punishing scientists and scientific journals that print contradictory evidence to the theory of global warming. So many now are feeding at the trough of climate change disaster capitalism that a rational open debate is almost impossible. City councils throughout the land are curiously all subscribing to the same developer, banker-enriching, land-grabbing policies of, quote, smart growth. Unelected, unaccountable regional boards made up of selected local officials, along with corporations and non-governmental organizations, are drawing up dictatorial regional plans for growth that supersede city governments, depriving citizens of the right to affect their own local land use policy. In the name of climate change remediation, we are told we must pack more people into smaller areas of land as our towns are being transformed into mega Manhattanized cities with tall, multi-unit apartment buildings that take our sunlight and ultimately our connection to the land and nature. Old buildings, neighborhoods, and communities are wastefully being torn down and made over to fit the vision of elite ideologue urban planners. In the upheaval, small, local, independent businesses are lost and replaced with national chains. This is not protection of nature, but a transfer of wealth, power, property ownership, and autonomy of cities, towns, and rural areas away from ordinary citizens. Today's, quote, environmentalists are working towards increased government and corporate control and surveillance over our lives through biohazardous technology, i.e. smart grid and smart meters, with no regard for thousands of independent scientific studies proving that digital microwave radiation damages biology. Instead of a call to decentralize, simplify, and conserve, citizens worldwide are being forced to apply, quote, smart meters to their homes, even as they are complaining of heart palpitations, extreme fatigue, mental confusion, sleeplessness, headaches, ear ringing, dizziness, and more.
It's mixed on the beat.
A technology is neither, quote, green nor, quote, sustainable if its byproduct harms humans, insects, plants, and animals. This unseen pollution from smart meters and smart grid infrastructure is increasing exponentially with no objections from official environmentalists. Unlike the old meters, smart meters use energy to power themselves 24/7. And I might interject and add, your energy is being used to power the smart meters 24/7. They are only advantageous to a centralized corporate model of energy control. Most shockingly, the left, who claim to have the corner on environmental stewardship, are the ones giving credence to geoengineering solar radiation management. That's the spraying of chemical nanoparticle pollution, such as aluminum oxide and sulfur dioxide via jet aircraft, into the atmosphere in order to block the sun, as a solution for global warming. On May 9, 2013, the Earth Island Institute sponsored a debate cavalierly dubbed, quote, Hack the Sky, at the Brouwer Center in Berkeley, California. The purported adversaries were Stanford geoengineer Ken Caldera and so-called ethicist Clive Hamilton, who belongs to the same geoengineering-promoting solar radiation management governance group with Caldera and other geoengineers. That very morning, two debaters made an appearance on liberal KALW's Your Call. A few months later, the apprentices on Progressive Radio's KPFA's Full Circle hosted the same performance duo. Why are environmental groups and left media putting on rigged debates, legitimizing and normalizing a preposterous technology which poisons and desecrates nature and can only cause irreparable harm, when they could be screaming warnings from the rafters that scientists are recklessly playing God with our world? These left media outlets are unconscionably frightening their following into accepting what amounts to nothing less than the corporate scientific intervention into our natural weather and climate systems. The environmental establishment chooses to ignore a whole area of inquiry relevant and crucial to the climate change equation, that of scientific, military, university, and governmental, NASA and NOAA, experimentation with our atmosphere and weather which has been going on for many decades. The book, Angels Don't Play This Harp, by Nick Begich and Jeannie Manning, documents the history of military experimentation with the Earth's atmosphere and chronicles the development, including 12 patents, of the high-frequency active auroral research project known as HARP, a field of giant antennas which can boil the upper atmosphere with a focused, steerable, billion-watt electromagnetic beam, sending electromagnetic waves back onto a target on Earth, causing changes in the jet stream and weather. The Department of Defense and their military contractors operate outside of all laws that protect the environment. Ironically, the climate change activists of today are listening to and trusting the very moneyed, powerful entities who have brought us to the brink of ecological collapse and forced us into fossil fuel dependency for diagnosis and treatment of our environmental calamities. I'm going to say that sentence again. Ironically, the climate change activists of today are listening to and trusting the very moneyed, powerful entities who have brought us to the brink of ecological collapse and forced us into fossil fuel dependency for diagnosis and treatment of our environmental calamities. The Rockefellers, one of the biggest funders and grant givers to the current environmental, quote, movement, have, throughout the decades, used their wealth and influence derived from big oil to remain in control of energy. They financed prohibition in the 1920s and 30s to keep farmers from making their own alcohol fuel and worked to criminalize hemp from which fuel was made. They killed the electric car and the municipal electric railways and influenced our government to suppress more than 5,000 energy technology patents, which have potential to end our energy crisis. The rhetoric we hear of creating economic and environmental equity among people and nations rings hollow. When you realize that the environmental establishment is being bought and commandeered by the richest fat cats in the world who have the inordinate means to create equity overnight and to stop their destructive environmental practices, if that were their true purpose. Instead, they're financing and manufacturing a phony grassroots campaign to pin the blame for environmental devastation on the, quote, every man who is living in a world choreographed by the corporate financial elite. Their message is that the future of the planet is impossible unless we, the little people, submit to the measures outlined by them. They have frightened, panicked, and demoralized the very people who would be fighting them with every breath into being the enforcement arm for their vision of our future. Fear of climate change is being manipulated to get the left to aid in the stealing of citizens' rights and the corporatization of our local government land, business, nature, and weather. While the environmentalists are stuck on climate change, the nuclear accidents, toxic spills, pesticide contamination, deep-sea oil drilling, fracking, tree cutting, electromagnetic radiation, introduction into the ecosystem of new dangerous technological compounds and organisms such as GMOs, synthetic biology, nanoparticles, the geoengineering of our skies, destructive war and weapons, and much, much more continue unabated. Now, left-wing pundits such as The Nation's Mark Hertzgard tell us to be impressed that the big-time financial fleecers and scammers, quote, Hank Paulson, hedge fund billionaire, Tom Steyer, and Michael Bloomberg, have come on board with climate change, as if they haven't always been. The war on climate change has gone publicly mainstream, as the likes of BP, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, Dow Chemical bankrolled the People's Climate March in New York City in September 2014. No, it is way past time for the left to question where blind belief in billionaire banker-funded environmentalism is taking us. That was titled The Real Inconvenient Truth by Vivian Workington. Vivian, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate your allowing me to express my feelings and ideas.
In a previous show, I read your interesting article titled The Real Inconvenient Truth, and then I sent that show to you to listen. because we kind of missed each other as far as being on at the same time to be a guest. So you got a chance to listen to the response from some of the callers. What were your thoughts on that?
Well, I was really disappointed that people did not address the specific things that I was saying, because I worked for almost 3 years on that. I had volumes of my feelings and my thoughts about what I was observing, and I feel like I distilled it down to two sides of a page. I think that even almost more than my initial absorbing of what I was seeing in the sky was just that people will not engage about what is really happening, and they'll just shine you on, and I mourn the loss of nature, but I also mourn that it doesn't faze people. I feel like there, a spell has been cast on the left wing, and up until 2008, I really believed that the climate change whole thing just really very strongly. And when I saw what was happening in the sky, I still didn't doubt it. But then somebody even mentioned that, oh, that's, you know, climate change, that's ridiculous, you know. And I honestly thought just even being in the room with somebody that said that was, oh, bad luck was going to come on me, or it was just an awful thing to say. But just observing the phoniness and the emptiness and the nonsensical things that they're doing to fight climate change, I'm totally convinced it's complete hokum at this point. But it's mainly because what I see, that how can people not see that? And sometimes I think it might be, you know, that kind of psychological blindness where you see something so hideous, you go blind, and that people have gone blind to that. But any time I try to bring it up to people, like, you know, you're at a party and people are tinkling the glasses, and you want to point out that it started out sunny, and then the sky became cloudy just because of the action of jets. And that doesn't alarm people. That is shocking to me. There's something deeply wrong. And then I had a friend who I thought, when I first saw this, I thought, well, all I need to do is just start telling people about it and showing people. And this guy who I was involved with a lot of environmental work, I called him and I said, you've got to look up right now, Jamie. He said to me, you know, if they were spraying something, it would be too obvious. And it's like people do not want to let it in. You can give evidence, you can win an argument, you could win a lawsuit, but people do not want to know this, and they'd rather be angry at you. My relatives, my family, I feel like I've lost them, you know. I mean, in a way, I've lost my relationship with them, people that I were my favorite people, you know. But they want to continue with this phony environmentalism, and it is so phony, like what the city of Berkeley is doing. I've been seeing the climate action plans and all this. Climate change is the ticket to ride for the corporatists to take over our cities, I think.
I like how you pointed out in your article, welcome to the real matrix, and I agree with that. It is dividing people up in terms of who sees through this and the people who'd rather not, or actually and sincerely do not see through it. There's a willful ignorance aspect as well, and there are people involved politically and on the corporate level that pretend that it's not happening, but they know the details of the nonstop geoengineering that's right in our face. We experienced that here in New York City yesterday.
I just saw it today. I went on a bike ride, and it was just awful. And yesterday there was one of those really big clouds and a hole punch thing in there. And mm-hmm. It's such an amazing phenomenon that people won't look at it.
I suspect that some of the propaganda strategy that was conducted in the past number of years, when you begin to explain some of this material to professional left-leaning individuals, they'll dismiss it as right-wing conspiracy. And
well, that is what has made me so suspicious of KPFA, where if you ever bring it up, you know, like they were interviewing this guy who took people on nature walks and stuff, and then I said, I called in, got, you know, one of the few opportunities, and I said, you know, I go out in nature, but there's something that really is bothering me, and I said something about the sky, and then the guy just got so mad. He says, oh, come on, those are just natural contrails. Oh, why do we even have to dignify this with a response, you know? And then it's like they've turned skepticism on its head, you know? We're the skeptics, and they're acting like they're the reasonable ones. Oh, why? You know, when the sky looks like an amazing horror.
Vivian, I want to offer a response, not that it really does any good for this, but it might do something. And this is from a response that Tom Slate out in California.
Yeah, I know him.
You do? Okay. You know what he says? He says, when somebody responds in that way, oh, come on, those are just contrails. Well, the response he gives, how do you know what those are? How do you know what those are? Please tell me, because I want to know how you know this.
Uh-huh.
Which is a great response. Please tell me how you know for sure that those are contrails.
It is, but has he ever gotten any good result? I mean, they do not want to take it in.
Well, it does sometimes cause the individual to reflect a bit on the response.
Yeah. I mean, it is. It's like they can't answer that, really.
Mm-hmm. But on the air, it might make for good radio in the future.
The reason I was trying to target the climate activists, that how can they just go on and on and on about climate change and never address that? Even if it is natural contrails, it would affect the climate, and so that. But they're very carefully never talk about that. I mean, that is so suspicious. I feel angry at them. You know, I talked to Bill McKibben once. He came, and I made sure to go, and I handed out a bunch of geoengineering flyers before he went on. And I went, and you know, while he was doing his book signing, and I told him about that. I said, and it had been a very bad day, you know, for the geoengineering. And I pointed it out to him, and he just kind of shook my head. I'll think about that, you know, I'll look into that, with a limp handshake. And, you know, he is completely bought by the Rockefellers.
If listeners want to find your article, The Real Inconvenient Truth, and other articles, how do they do that?
Well, they could go to the Berkeley Daily Planet, because they archive those articles there.
Okay. The Berkeley Daily Planet. Vivian, who wrote the article titled The Real Inconvenient Truth, I want to thank you for being a guest on In Other News, and we'll have you back on again.
Thank you so much.
I'd like to maybe point out that what you said about being trapped by fear seems to me to be what your show traps in mostly. Mm. And all your callers seem to be trapped by fear. They're afraid of chemtrails.
Not true. That's not true.
They're afraid of GMOs.
That's not true.
They're afraid of GMOs in their food.
That's not true. That's not true, sir.
And you're purveying this.
That's not true either.
How do you know? How do we know that you're not a tool of the corporations trying to frighten us with GMOs and chemtrails?
I'm not trying to frighten anyone. You're wrong. You're so wrong. How do we know you're not a plant calling? You're not an agent provocateur.
Well, are you? Does that make you afraid? Are you making your audience afraid of me?
No,
now?
In fact, I brought that up because of people like you that would call in and say things like this.
What did you bring up so that?
I brought up the fact that you got to be careful and not getting mired into the
right,
frequency of fear. But you have to be aware of this. You can't just run around and say everything's fine. You have to be aware of the manipulation, okay?
So talking about chemtrails all the time doesn't make
all the time
fearful?
Talking about it all the time?
Every show I've listened to you.
Every show. No, it hasn't been every show.
Every other show?
Oh, every other show now. Okay. Make up your mind, sir. We go now to part of an interview with Wanda Allen. She's a New Hampshire resident who at the time had recently become aware of the geoengineering programs and began to make presentations at her local library. The sudden awareness to the reality of these operations being conducted in plain sight can be a jarring experience. Many who have had this experience can't believe how long it took them to finally see it. How can a veil be so strong to hide this reality from good, intelligent, caring humans on this planet? Well, we explore some of those reasons that could contribute to a delayed awareness. Let's go now to hear part of that interview with Wanda Allen. Wanda Allen, welcome to Another News.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Wanda, I watched your presentation that you gave earlier this year titled Look Up, and it was about geoengineering. You gave this in Bartlett, New Hampshire. Very interesting. You pulled a lot of peripheral information together under the geoengineering or climate engineering umbrella. And it makes sense because we've said on the show before, when you mess with the sky, you mess with everything, the web of life. Your experience in becoming aware of the ongoing weather control operations was something I think that happens to a number of people, but could you tell listeners what had happened to you?
Sure. I think it started, there was a little bit of preview to it before I actually started noticing the skies, but I started spending winters out in Arizona, and I was learning about GMO foods and going organic, and also learning more and more about what goes on behind the scenes that I was not aware of. And I started signing petitions, and then when you start signing petitions, then more petitions come to you, and I became really aware of how things that were going on as far as our food and other things that I was really against, and thinking all along that our government was taking care of us and doing what we felt, that looking in our best interest, and then realizing that really wasn't so. But going organic, I felt like I was going in a good direction, and I was taking care of things that mattered to me. And when I came back to New Hampshire, I really downsized and reduced my carbon footprint as much as possible and was feeling incredibly good about it. And one afternoon, it was in November, and I happened to go outside to play with my dog, and I looked up in the sky, and it was just filled with a milky white haze and all these trails that went from horizon to horizon. And I had this sinking feeling in my stomach that something was horribly wrong, that I had never seen something like that before, and I was wondering what on earth is going on. So, but I knew that it was never right and that I had never seen something like that before, mm-hmm. and it was such a contrast to the beautiful blue sky that it really stood out to me. So I asked some friends about it, and they told me to watch a movie, What in the World Are They Spraying? So I did, and it answered everything, pretty much. It was exactly what I was seeing in the sky, and from that point on, I knew that it was sort of the breaking point for me in that I had to stand up and do something about it, that I just couldn't fathom the idea that somebody would actually take control of our weather and do what they're doing and think that it was okay.
Could you tell listeners about the experience that you had when you began to speak with friends and relatives about what you were seeing, and you began to share this information with others? What had happened?
It was interesting because there's it's a big fine line. And I think for me also in this whole journey has been a big learning about human behavior and how people react to things. Now, my closest friends were very concerned with me, and because it upset me enough that I literally cried for 4 months, and I knew that either it was going to make or break me, and I felt that I had to do something about it. So while they were pushing me forward in learning more about it or to do something about it and not let it get to me, I forced them to come along with me and make them see what was happening. It was like, you can't just ignore it and pretend that it's not there. So luckily for me, my mom and my daughter, people that I were really, really close to, they immediately believed it, and they would listen to me and, you know, in explaining all these things, and they're very aware of it, so I'm able to talk to them about it. But then other friends who, one was an environmental lawyer, and I thought for sure she, of all people, would be so interested in this, and she just shut it down completely and said that it was perfectly normal and that contrails had always spread out over the sky, and unfortunately we just sort of had to go our separate ways.
Sounds difficult, Wanda, and I'm sure a lot of listeners can relate to that who have been in similar situations. We've had on a guest, his name is Tom Slate, and he is out there in California, and he had really presented a very simple but effective response to your environmental lawyer friend, which would be, well, how do you know for sure that that is normal? Because I'm interested. What data are you looking at? And that it's a very simple response, but very, very effective.
Yes, I think that, but also I think it has been set up against us. There's been a huge amount of time spent and money, I'm sure, to keep this from coming out. And so there is a lot of disinformation out there as well. And I feel that people who really don't want to deal with this issue immediately go to that disinformation, and it makes them feel better. And then they can say, okay, now I can just set it aside and not have to think about it because this person says it's okay, rather than trusting your own instincts and your own gut feeling, which I feel that we've certainly gotten away from, that we trust what the TV will say or we trust what the professionals will say, rather than questioning ourselves and going, does that really sit right with me? I think that we've gotten away from that a little bit.
Yes, indeed. And Carl Jung says a lot of people have two personalities. One is the very natural self that will speak its mind, and the other, it's a persona in a sense, but the real natural self is the one with the intuition that would know that something's wrong, and a lot of people aren't as in touch with that part of themselves. That's what Carl Jung was setting up in a way.
It makes sense.
Were there any other significant interactions that you want to share with the listeners?
I felt there was one. I've always been a huge nature person, so in some ways I even beat up on myself. How did it take me so long not to see this? Because I'm outside gardening or recreating and that sort of thing. But I have a friend who is an instructor, an outdoor instructor for climbing and hiking and that sort of thing, and I reached out to her and just saying, wow, you're out there in these big western skies, you must see this everywhere. And she out and out told me that she didn't want to watch any videos or get any information because she did not want to be sad. And I tried to express to her that, you know, we have always taken from nature. We take it for granted. We love that that we can go out and be in the woods and listen to the birds or to go on a mountaintop or all of these beautiful, wonderful things. But when it comes time for us to take care of it, you know, who is going to speak for it? It can't speak for itself. And so I was quite angry with her for saying she didn't want to be sad, but she still wanted to be out and enjoy everything that it has to offer. But I think even still, with somebody denying that much, though, once that seed is planted, it must be incredibly difficult to fight that that knowledge, you know, that, you know, you do look at the sky no matter what, and it's got to hit you. So it must be hard to deny it, I guess, in their own, even though they are denying it.
It is a topic that does tend to separate people, and I know it can be examined among gender as well. Have you noticed anything in terms of awareness regarding women and men?
Yes, absolutely. I find that women, say, between the ages of 35 and up, are very receptive to it and are very upset about it and feel sort of this nurturing feeling towards it, even though the two friends that I mentioned before were women. But in general, I found that that women were more willing to take a little action towards it, or at least believe it. And then the men, I found, were like putting it off. No way, can't happen, it's not happening. And I questioned it and wondered if it was harder for men to feel vulnerable as opposed to women. You know, maybe in not, it sounds, I don't know, not to say that women are vulnerable, but I think they're more in a nurturing state and that sort of thing. And maybe that's where they're more willing to be open to it, whereas men are like, we're the protectors. And really having these planes in the sky spraying chemicals on us is a very vulnerable position to be in. And it's hard to accept that, I think.
Yes, it's a massive intrusion. There's almost nothing anyone can do right now. We're bringing awareness, but no one is going to the airbase to protest or stand in front of an aircraft taking off that's ready to go into these weather control operations. I would say you had a painful awareness process, but you did actively do something. Now, you did have a skiing story. Do you want to tell that one?
Yeah. Well, you know, because I found out in November, and I am a very much an outdoorsy type of person, and two of my closest friends who were very concerned about me at the time, because I feel that it absolutely was a grieving process. You know, it took me a while to figure it out, you know, what it was, but I literally was grieving because the world that I thought was is not. And I think that's one of the hardest things for people to come to grips with. We all have this idea of what our world is, and when you find out that that just simply is not true, you do go through a grieving process. So they insisted that I get outside, and this winter was horrible with the spraying because we would have these, you know, we have this pristine, well, it's not pristine snow because it's the ice nucleation, you know, but there's, so it snowed a lot, and they would force me to go out, but I would turn around and force them at the same time to watch the planes and see what they do. And I just said, so you know that this is just not me, you know, coming up with these ideas. And also where we live, we don't have planes. It's not normal for us to have planes here. So to see these planes, like within the 2 hours that we would be out skiing in the woods, the skies would completely go from pristine, beautiful blue to whiteout conditions. And so they were forced to watch it, and there was no way that they could deny what was going on. But it's interesting how they settle into it, and I think it takes different people obviously react different ways, and there is a knowledge. I think there's a huge knowledge out there of people that do know about this that don't necessarily take action on it. For one thing, once you discover this, or once I discovered this, and I feel others do this as well, it's like your eyes never leave the skies anymore. You know, it's like it's like you're constantly watching out to what are they going to do next. And in realizing, being 52 years old, that I had never seen, rarely ever even seen a contrail ever form. And then And then, we might have military jets that do the supersonic fast up through our mountains, but even they never left a trail. Or we would have like a little twin prop engine type thing come by, and they never left a trail. So I think that's why it was such a screaming reality to me when I saw these planes leaving trails. And in watching them and then learning about the high-bypass turbofan jet engines that are not water-injected, and they go through this whole process, so it's really difficult for them to leave a trail. It's so rare. And they would fly behind our mountains, and then there, so it didn't matter where they went or what time of year or what the humidity level was, or how cold it was. I mean, the whole thing, it doesn't matter. They would leave a trail. And then I have seen them also flying together where one is going by leaving a very short trail. The next one right behind it is leaving a very long trail. Another one will come in leaving a short trail. So they're all spraying in whatever capacity and whatever that they're doing, and the sky always changes. Whatever is happening with them, it always was changing. Exactly. And the other thing, too, that a lot of people don't know about, but, the whole HARP system and all of the extra low frequencies, the ELFs, and that is emitted around us, and particularly in cities, it's even worse, but with all the cell towers and the Gwen towers and even the NEXRAD towers and all of these towers, and if there was some way to, like in a movie when you see that they spray to see where the red the laser lines are or, the infrared, it's like if we could see how many frequencies were flying around us. And they also are on, it's all in the same frequencies as our hearts and our brains. So, and they have showed, there's been studies where they've used it as a type of torture to be able to do mind control. So it can make you very sad, or it can make you very happy or angry, or all these different emotions. And they use these frequencies to, move jet streams, move the clouds wherever they want them to go, and all of that sort of thing. So that's like a whole other aspect.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Join me again Monday, 11 p.m. To reach me, my email is inothernewsradio@yahoo.com. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.